awesome tamale today. It was absolutely delicious. Probably the best tamale I've ever had. Yeah, so welcome to the Commander and MTG podcast, everyone. I'm Phil DeLuca, and my fellow hosts are...
Sean Kirkcopain-Watson.
And Nate Burgess.
We're your friendly neighborhood Commander community-oriented podcast, and we will put a spotlight on the goings-on of the EDH Commander community. Each episode, we will talk about topics you want to hear about and focus on listener contributions. Remember to check us out on Twitter, at Commander and MTG, and talk to us there. Remember, there are three banned topics we will never, ever talk about on this podcast. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
Amen to that, brother.
So this episode, we're going to be talking about Magic Origins, the brand new set released last ever, so they say, core set, which I believe is a harbinger of sets to come, as it were. But first, in the news, there's a new mulligan rule, isn't there? Or the potential for a new mulligan rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who don't know, starting with Pro Tour Magic Origins, they're introducing a small change to the mulligan rule, which is, so after you've done your normal mulliganing, which doesn't include partial mulligans that a lot of people do, but if you're following the standard also mulliganing, if you had taken a mulligan at any point, so you don't have a starting hand of seven cards, you may scry one before the game begins. Small change, but actually potentially quite a big change. What do we think, fellas?
Yeah, it definitely adds to your ability to smooth out your draws so that you don't miss your first four or five land drops.
Yeah, that's a pain when that happens. So, do you think this is... The one criticism I've heard of this, which I don't actually agree with, but interesting to hear you guys' opinions. Do you think this is almost rewarding or punishing the player who keeps his hand of seven? Or rewarding the player that mulligans once a bit too much?
Hmm. Well, it's going to destroy our format. I'm reasonably certain about it.
I'm already selling up to start playing Tiny Leaders.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's going to destroy our format because I've read it on the internet.
Really?
Yeah, many people have been saying that our format is now going to be destroyed because of this mulligan if it's adopted, and they're kind of hoping that it doesn't.
How many?
Many.
How many?
Many. It's Fox News many. People are talking, Nate.
This is the first I've heard about it.
I'm going to bring in the... I'm going to bring in Band's topic two there with the match of Fox News.
Religion? Badoom. Yeah. Thanks, hey. I'll be here all week. I don't think it punishes the person who stays with seven cards. I mean, they're inherently at an advantage. One of the core tenets of the game is card advantage, and by mulliganing down to six, you're already ceding card advantage to the person who doesn't.
Yeah, sure.
And Scry just mitigates that.
Right.
And it changes mulliganing down to five from a devastating effect on your odds of victory to merely a really bad effect on your odds of victory.
Yeah, so we, in my last paper group this week gone, we implemented this rule. And we actually implemented it, including it into our partial mulligans. And if anything, it made games a little nicer because you could smooth out hands. You didn't have as many people feeling sort of threatened by a mana screw. And they just, yeah, it didn't make a huge impact. Some people hit a land a turn quicker. The game got going faster. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with it. And I'd actually like to test it in some of our playtests.
I'd love to you to have better access to hands for my new Centripetus deck to take out of your hand. But
on second thought, it won't apply to Centripetus decks.
Oh, that's a shame. The Whisper.
Isn't it, though?
That's weird. I didn't see that rule written down.
Yeah, it's like rule 703.A1 or something like that.
And me and Nate are both going all Esper on you at the moment, Phil. What have you done to us?
It's a good shift. Soon you'll both be playing Selesnya decks and frolicking through fields of flowers.
I already played my Selesnya decks. So what does that tell you?
Wait, what do you mean?
I've already played Kermetra.
Yeah.
So
it tells me that you'll come home eventually.
Okay.
I've got a Sigarda deck, which I took apart and rebuilt as a Gave deck. Garve, however you want to say that, Commander. We should all, as a community, get a consensus on how to pronounce the Guru Spore's name.
We should. So actually, let's start a vote with our listeners. Listeners, write in or tweet in or whatever the appropriate verb is for Facebook in how you pronounce G-H-A-V-E. What, he's the toadstool? What is he?
He's the fungus shaman. The Guru of Spores.
Yes, the Guru of Spores. How do you pronounce that? Yeah, maybe we shouldn't be podcasting tonight. It's an interesting mood I'm in. I'm sorry.
No. One of the hosts and I listeners may or may not have had a blow to the head at work today. See if you can spot which one.
Hey, Earl the Mist Ducker's Selesnya.
Yeah, he is. Well, wait. Earl the Mist Soccer? No, he's not.
Naya.
Right.
But he's got the colors of Selesnya backing him up.
Yeah, but once you add that red, it ceases to be Selesnya.
Yeah, my Maelstrom Wanderer deck is not, is it?
No, it's actually good.
Hey!
Oh, whoops! Sean, speaking of blows to the head.
Yeah.
You played in a pre-release, didn't you?
I did. I finished it about an hour ago. I got home. And at this point, I have been awake for 27 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So, sleep deprivation and magic is good. I had to leave early, one round early, because I had to get back to record this podcast.
So you are dedicated.
I am. I went 2-2. And I was using the Liliana Black Box, but I ended up going Orzhov with it. I managed to get two Kota feeds in my pool, the 6-6 demon that allows you to deck yourself and die at the same time. And he's surprisingly good. 6-6 flyers for 6 mana are awesome. I also got an Erebos's Titan. He's not an EDH playable card ever, but he's a 5/5 creature for 4 mana that's occasionally indestructible. It's not terrible.
No, that's not bad for limited.
But the absolute champion card, and I won't discuss it too much in case we're discussing it later in this review show, was the Starfield of Nyx. Which with the black allowed me to keep replaying Weight of the Underworld over and over again as a recurring removal spell.
Oh, that's ugly.
Yeah, I know. It was good. I enjoyed it a lot. Sadly, the champion card that was doing the rounds was the Gaia's Avenger, which is a reprint card, which is a little bit disappointing that a reprint of an old card is the best card in the room.
Yeah. It's like Meryl Streep.
Wait.
Thanks, Nate. I took a good one. My sleep-deprived brain caught that a few seconds later.
Nate, how long have you been up?
Oh, not too long. Maybe 8 hours.
2 years, isn't it, for you, no. Nate? Nate doesn't sleep, folks.
Nate is the one who will pull stretches almost, well, regularly in excess of 30 hours, and sometimes much, much longer.
Mm. So anyway, speaking of Origin, should we move on to our main topic today, which is having a look at some of the better EDH-relevant cards for Magic Origins.
Yes, that's right, Sean.
Yeah.
We will get to we're going to list our top 5 each, right? And we'll go through that. Our listeners have also contributed their top 2 cards and what decks they plan to use them in. But first, I think we're going to start with the potential commanders in the set. And that was so that each of us could focus on other cards that we would put into the 99 as opposed to just everybody saying, yes, I'd play Liliana. So let's start with Liliana.
Yeah, I would play Liliana.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
She and Sidisi are really good friends.
Yeah, so Liliana, Heretical Healer, she... are we going to read all these cards?
Well, we already talked about Liliana and Chandra in episode 4.
Oh, that's
Jason
right,
Hall.
Episode 4.
Yeah, we did talk about Liliana, didn't we?
Yeah. So if you haven't already, go back and listen to episode 4 with Jason Ault. We'll provide the link in our show notes. And instead of reading Lil, we'll just kind of talk about how we want to use her.
Yeah, so I'm going to test her out as the commander. I'm going to take Sheldred out of my mono black deck that I love and put
Good
Liliana
choice.
In. Why did you say that, Phil?
Well, Sheldred is not the best commander for a mono black deck.
No, Erebos is, in my opinion. But
yeah, he's really good.
He's so good. Yeah. So, but I've been testing Sheldred just to be a bit nastier, and the difference between the Sheldred deck and the Erebos deck is everyone beats the shite out of you if you're running Sheldred, and they kind of ignore you if you're running Erebos, so I know who's better there. But I think Liliana will fit into this beautifully. She has a really achievable flip, and she has really relevant powers, all of them. She's great.
Yeah, I think the challenge in black is going to be finding a way to trigger another non-token creature. You're right. That'll be really easy.
I like her for the free zombie.
Yeah, because, hey, free zombie.
Free zombie.
Zombro.
Speaking of, our listeners will be able to download a commander inversion of the Liliana zombie token, which we're calling a Zombro. Another podcast may or may not have called it a Zombro, but we are going one step further and we're commissioning what we think of as Liliana's brother. And you know it's Liliana's brother when you see it on the card. It will instantly become obvious that this is in fact Liliana's brother. No other.
I believe his name in the story is Nigel.
Josu. They tried to claim it's Josu.
It's a typo.
As we all know, using Wizard's own pronunciation guide, J-O-S-U is pronounced Nigel anyway.
Sorry, anyone who's listening to this or works at Wizards, but yeah. So yeah, Nigel will be around soon.
Yeah.
Chandra, moving on to Chandra, the Fire of Kaladesh / Chandra Roaring Flame.
As bad as we thought.
Yeah, it is terrible. I saw people pulling it at the pre-release a few hours ago and just sticking it almost immediately in a separate pile and going, nope. So if that doesn't work at limited, where one damage is relevant and two damage is relevant once you flip her, it's not going to cut the mustard in EDH, I don't think.
Right. Aww. I just don't think, I mean, you're never going to flip her without adding some equipment or some pants onto her.
And then they just fall off when you flip her.
Right. And so, you know, why didn't they just make the cost like 2 red mana or something to flip her?
Yeah. Have a creature with haste in play. As soon as that happens, she flips. I don't know, something better than what she is.
Yeah.
But right.
There you go.
If the flip were easier, I would like the card. I like the Planeswalker side.
Maybe if she had Vigilance. I know it's not a red power, but then she could at least attack, then tap to deal the point of damage, and then flip.
Maybe when we return to Innistrad, which should be next fall, they'll include a card that allows you to flip a flip card.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
You can just transform a flip card. And just as this is rotating out of Standard, that card will appear in Standard and be useful for all the new werewolves and vampires and other things.
This is long-term planning.
Yeah, long-term planning. See, well, I firmly believe we are seeing the effects of block-to-block planning in a true sense.
So cards that don't look good now, they might look good in a year.
Yeah.
When there's other cards to back them up.
That's been true in Standard for a while. You can name certain cards that suddenly became relevant, particularly around removal. So things that were poor removal, as soon as there's a rotation, become really good. And
yeah.
Because we're in an eternal format in Commander, we tend to find the best of what we want to do and stick with it loyally. Anyway, moving on to Mr. White. I've been pronouncing this incorrectly, apparently. apparently, his name is Kitty Katz, Hero of Akros.
Yes. Yes.
And when he flips, he goes and changes his name to Gideon Battleforged.
Yes. And he apparently grows a beard as that transformation occurs.
Very impressive mutton chops.
You're right. It's a war beard. It's a battle beard, if you will. Maybe we should all grow battle beards, guys.
Yeah. Sadly, my Phyrexian implants mean I can only grow sort of patchy chunks of beard. And I suffer from what we call in this country boy face. So, yeah, it's not good. I will forever be Kitty Cat's Hero of Akros.
But if any of us can properly wear eyeliner, it's you.
Yes.
Maybe that'll be the image for this episode.
Lock up your doors, guys. Lock up your doors. So we'll quickly read these. So he's 1 white for a 2/1 creature. At the end of combat, if Kittian, Hero of Akros, and at least 2 other creatures attack this combat, so battalion, exile Kittian and return him to the battlefield, transformed under his owner's control, pay 2 and a white. Kittian gains indestructible to end a turn. He's a 2-1 creature, which I might have already said.
He's a legendary human soldier.
He is, which is actually relevant in the colors.
Yeah.
When he's a planeswalker, he comes in at loyalty 3, is plus 2, untap up to 2 target creatures and opponent. Oh, I can't read that, it's too small. Someone else read the flip side.
Plus 2, up to 1 target creature an opponent controls, attacks Gideon, Battleforged, during its controller's next turn, if able. His plus 1 is, until your next turn, target creature gains indestructible, untap that creature.
Neat.
And his 0... Good. So he only builds, he comes in with 3 loyalty counters, and he builds up. His 0 is, until end of turn, Gideon Battleforged becomes a 4-4 human soldier creature with indestructible that's still a planeswalker. OMG. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to him this turn, so he doesn't lose any of his planeswalker counters as a result of combat damage.
Yeah, he's interesting.
I have not yet played a Gideon in any of my decks.
Nope.
I tried Gideon Jura. He was all right. Yeah, that was it, really.
All right.
Anybody think of a good use for him?
He'd be good in Tajik, Blade of the Legion, because they both have the 2 other creatures attack this combat abilities. Nahiri Lithomancer could use him. Basically, any white token deck could use him.
He has a sort of soft lock on one of your opponent's creatures by forcing them to attack him if it's a creature that doesn't have a specific tap ability to save its backside. He's okay. If I was running mono white, I wouldn't choose him as the commander.
No, but you put him in the deck.
Probably, yeah.
Probably put him in a Darien deck.
Yeah, he'd definitely go in a human soldier tribal deck, which is a thing. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen all of one Darien deck played.
He could go in a good Boros, like a battalion deck.
Yep, that's true.
Jorkadine.
I'm not blown away by him, to be honest. He's just solid. He's better than Chandra, not as good as Liliana.
Right.
In my humble opinion.
Hey, that could be fun. When we're stack ranking them right now, of the 3 we've talked about, Lil, Chandra, and Kitty, we're looking at Lil is the best, then Kitty, then Chandra.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Moving on to the poster boy of magic, I think.
Let's see how this guy fits in.
Jace, Vryn's prodigy.
Dun dun dun. Or as Josh was saying, bwong.
So he's 1 and a blue for a legendary creature human wizard. He's a 0/2. Yeah, powerful, I can hear you say.
Yeah.
Tap, draw a card, then discard a card. If there are 5 or more cards in your graveyard, exile Jace, Vryn's prodigy, and flip him. So that's achievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Draw a card and discard a card, and a loot ability is quite nice.
So what they're saying is by turn 6, just flip him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Just comes in and flips. That's kind of what you're going to want to aim with him. Because if this comes out and sits on the table and needs a whole cycle of turns before you can activate his ability, then someone's probably going to kill him. I know
someone's
I would.
Someone's going to push him off one of those mage rings.
Oh.
Yeah. Aww. So what does he do when he's flipped, guys?
He's Jace, Telepath Unbound. He comes in with 5 loyalty. Plus 1. Up to 1 target creature gets -2/-0 until your next turn.
How about that? He protects himself from really tiny creatures.
-3. You may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard this turn. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead.
So you have to pay its mana cost again, gang.
Aww.
Yeah, don't misread it as some people were doing as, hey, I get a free spell out of my graveyard. Now you have to cast it again.
And then you exile it, so it's like everything gets flashback.
Yeah, it's good.
-9, you get an emblem with, whenever you cast a spell, target opponent puts the top 5 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard.
So, Mill is very linear. I like it because I like mill strategy and he'll fit into that nicely, but there's already a better milling Jace in Memory Adept.
Yep.
So really we're looking at the first 2 abilities on this. The plus 1 ability is not massively relevant in my opinion. Anyone else have an opinion on that?
Nah.
Yeah, meh. The -3 is actually pretty good.
Sure.
He comes in at loyalty 5, which is higher than all the other planeswalkers in Origins. If he came in at 6, I think it'd be a lot better because you could get the -3 off twice and then let him die.
All right. I'll say it. No one's playing this card.
Nope.
I mean, really, his looting ability is better than either of his planeswalker abilities that are likely to be used. Well, the minus three is good, but you're only going to get it off once.
You're going to lose his looting ability as well, because it's not a you may flip him, you have to flip him.
Right.
Yep.
So you draw a card, discard a card, flip him mid-game, and...
Meh.
He's okay.
The next one's a card, isn't it? So where do you put Jace, actually? Do you stack rank him above Kitty?
I think he's probably below Kitty, above Chandra.
I'd put him in last.
Well, the only reason I put him above Chandra is you've actually got a chance to use his planeswalker side, unlike Chandra, who's just going to sit there as a 2-2 creature that does nothing.
Yeah, she's like a prodigal pyromancer, but with more limited targets.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's only 2 mana. I mean, can't hurt, can it? Let's presume your auto flips. Would you pay 2 mana for a sorcery that says you can give one of your spells in your graveyard flashback? That's
Isn't there a spell that already grants spells flashback? Well, I mean, other than...
Snapcaster Mage.
Sure.
So he's the same as a Snapcaster Mage, but isn't a creature. That's not too bad.
Well, it's like a Snapcaster Mage next turn.
No, it's not, because I think you play him after you've got 5 cards in your graveyard, which is going to happen really fast.
But you still have to tap him.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
It's part of the same rule. I thought it was a separate rule.
So you compare him to, granted, it's not strictly better, but Dralnu, right? Lich Lord, tap him for target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. Flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. There's a sorcery called Past in Flames that's 4 mana, 4 CMC. Each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn.
Ooh.
Yeah. You might be able to reuse this, Chase. I don't think he's terrible.
There's Recoup, right? Another sorcery, 1 and a red for target sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. And it itself has flashback for 3 and a red.
Ooh.
So it's actually more likely to be used than Jace's second ability twice.
So, I could see this card going into the Izzet decks out there. Things like Melek and the spell-based Izzet decks. He'd be really good in that.
But maybe Talrand.
Talrand will go and get something back. He's just very linear, isn't he? Like, either fits into specific spell-based Izzet strategies or poorly into mill strategies, which are arguably already a poor strategy in EDH anyway.
The real question is, have we spent too much time talking about him?
Yep.
He's the poster boy of magic. This is what the listeners want. Look at his beautiful eyes, his chiseled jawline.
I think it's funny that in the artwork for Jace, the pushed off of a majoring, he looks like Gavin Verhey. He's one of the designers of Magic the Gathering, and he always cosplays as Jace.
All right, good job.
Yeah, and in the story, Jace's father is named Gav. Yes, clearly named after Gavin Verhey. So way to go, Gavin. That's pretty cool.
All right, Gavin.
Yeah.
They're not doing vanity cards anymore, but they will do vanity characters.
Well, speaking of vanity cards, this next card's last version was based on a popular rapper.
Yeah.
Yolandi Vassar from Die Antwoord. Anyway, what's this card other than a South African hip-hop artist?
It's Nissa Vastwood Seer.
Hmm.
2 and a green for a legendary creature, Elf Scout. She's a 2-2, by the way. And when Nissa Vastwood Seer enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic forest card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control 7 or more lands, exile Nissa, then return her to the battlefield transformed under her owner's control.
Okay, so she's a wood elves.
With the same cost.
She tutors a basic forest.
Yeah, she's exactly a wood elves. That's what wood elves do. Oh, no, you can't get a non-basic forest with Nissa, but I think you could probably forgive her for that, for what else she does. So what does she do once she's transformed?
Nissa Sage Animus comes in at 3 loyalty. She's a planeswalker. +1, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, put it into your hand. So it's a Coiling Oracle for +1.
Yay.
That's handy. -2, put a legendary 4/4 green elemental creature token named Ashaya, the Awoken World, onto the battlefield.
Ashaya!
All right. -7, untap up to 6 target lands. They become 6/6 elemental creatures. They're still lands.
Womp.
And that's not till the end of turn. That's full stop.
Oh, yeah, forever.
Yep.
They're man lands. Permanent man lands. Or lady lands, if you prefer. She's good for mono green ramp decks like Omnath or Titania, Freyalise. Do you think she works for multicolor green commanders because she's only getting basic forests?
She works for Karametra.
She'll go in my Maelstrom Wanderer deck.
All right.
If I can get enough copies of her, she'll directly replace the Wood Elves I run in several decks.
Yeah, I think she and Lil are just usable, right? These cards are good in any deck that run their colors.
I think Liliana's a pretty good commander as well, because Mono Black is, of the five mono-colored decks, Mono Black's probably the easiest to build something successful with.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, she's good.
Do you put her above or below Lil? So you put her below Lil.
I do, yeah, because, I mean, she's in a color I don't recognize. It's that sort of yellow and blue mixed. I don't really get it. So, yeah, Liliana, then Nissa, then probably Jace for me. Jace and Kithi in Titan fourth, and then Chandra at the bottom.
Chandra's not even in the top five.
Chandra goes and sulks in a corner. Why will they never design me good rule?
My stack ranking puts Lil, then Nissa, then Kitty Cat, then Jace, then Chandra.
Liliana, Nissa, then Gideon, then Chandra, then Jace. And that's the story.
Oh, really?
That's my story. I'm sticking
Look
to it.
Look at you putting Chandra in the five.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't like blue, do you?
Eh.
You heard it here, folks. Nate says blue's the worst color in Magic. That's what he said.
It's easy mode. Blue is easy mode.
I completely agree.
I will find you and hunt you down.
With a blue spell.
It's a well-known fact that card draw is terrible in our format. In fact, all of Magic. So.
Yeah, but blue does make card draw easier.
All right, so who are these non-planeswalker commander fools?
So there's a cycle of legendary creatures that are not planeswalkers, and each of them is actually a mentor, according to the fiction that's released in Uncharted Realms over the last 4 weeks. They haven't done, maybe they have in the last couple of days, I've been kind of busy, but they haven't done Nissa. And so we don't know how that one particular card fits into a story. But the first one, Hyksos, or however you'd pronounce it.
Yeah, Hyksos.
Nigel, prison warden.
No, he's not Liliana's brother. This is Keith. Keith, prison warden.
Keith. Right, Keith, prison warden. All right,
get in my... You're throwing you in the nick, you bastard. But,
So he is the aforementioned prison warden who is actually in charge of the prison where Kidian is thrown when he's a little boy who stole bread or something. So Hyksos, prison warden, is 3 and white for a human soldier. It's almost like they're made to go together. Mm. He's a 4/4, has flash, and whenever a creature deals combat damage to you, if Keith, prison warden, entered the battlefield this turn, exile that creature until Hyksos leaves the battlefield.
Oblivion ring, sort of.
Yep.
Well, yeah, he can Oblivion ring a whole bunch of attackers, can't he?
Yes, he can a whole army. He's even better than that, the angel that exiles
angel.
Three. No, not Resto. There's an angel that exiles three creatures. We've been playing it recently in Carador and Athreos.
I must have missed that one. I'm sure I know what it is, and I'll kick myself when I work it out.
It's not a bad effect, and in particular, if your opponent has just, you know, gone in with everything, if you can, assuming you survive the damage, Hyksos will get rid of all of those threats.
Well, if he's your commander, and he's sitting in your command zone, your opponent's going to be really reticent to swing in with a load of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I don't think of him as a commander.
I think you have to look at these guys as commanders, potentially.
Yeah, this guy's not a great commander, because he relies on surprise. And so if you don't have surprise, then
if you lose surprise, what he gains is deterrence.
Angel of Serenity.
There you go.
There you go.
It's like that Angel of Serenity angel.
Yeah, that's the one.
For an entire army at one time.
All right.
So I think if you have him as your commander, what he loses in surprise, he gains in deterrence. Because you're not going to want to attack where your opponent's got 5 mana up and he's sitting in the command zone at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. So if the player running Hyksos as a commander simply paralyzes him or herself in order to maintain 5 mana available on your opponent's turn, then you're okay. Right. This, This could prevent all of your opponents from attacking you.
But he has to go into a prison-type draw-go deck, doesn't he? With Vedalken Orrery to power it through, etc.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a specific build, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's unusable as a commander. Anyway, I'm bored of his stupid smiling face and his rubbish bronze armor. Let's move on.
Yeah, and he's got a white tribble in his hand.
Next up...
You'll never be able to unsee that now.
He's got a what?
A white tribble in his hand.
Oh, yeah. So next up, we have the Sphinx that asks the riddle, what will I do with a nail? I'll hammer it. Hi, Arbiter. 5 colorless and 2 blue. Legendary creature Sphinx, 5/5 flying. As I'll hammer it, Hi, Arbiter enters the battlefield. Each opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose the name of a non-land card revealed this way. Your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen name as long as this creature is on the battlefield.
Snap.
So if he was my commander, for shorthand, could I refer to him as MC Al Hammerit?
No.
I'm available for children's parties, bar mitzvahs, and weddings.
You know, in the story, he's pretty badass. He's really cool.
Yeah, he's the end boss of Jace Beleren's origin story.
Yeah, and simultaneously the mentor and the end boss.
Yes.
Is it like a Sith thing where Jace has to destroy MC Al Hammerit to take his power or something?
Sure, why not? No, no, it's not.
You can't? Yeah, okay.
No, it's not. Al Hammerit is basically like a CIA handler. And he has brainwashing powers. And yeah, so cool. So you can extrapolate from there.
I'd read about a bit of Jace's story a long time ago, and I think at no point did it mention that Al Hammerit was a massive Sphinx.
Yeah.
Just said it was a dude. So here, the actual card itself, what do we think? So 7 mana for a 5/5 flyer is a bit meh. It's blue, though, so you always overpay for him. And he casts a meddling mage, but only on a card in your opponent's hands.
One of your opponents.
Well, each opponent reveals his or her hand.
Yes, but you only choose the name of a non-land card.
Oh, not a land. Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. So everybody reveals, and then you choose one card, and you're like, nope.
Oh, that's much less interesting.
Yeah. I mean...
Not bad.
It's okay. Your opponent's not normally holding their Prophet Kruvix, because as soon as they get it, they play it. So...
Yeah, they draw it, and they're like, Prophet of Kruvix!
I wouldn't use this as a commander because after he dies once, well, I mean, he has to die to get or be flickered to get his ability going again if you need to relock it on something else. And he dies once and he becomes 9 mana to cast.
Yeah.
I think he's 2 mana too expensive, person. 2 colorless mana too expensive.
You pretty much have to play him like a Tasigur deck, right? Where you're basically flickering Tasigur or you're flickering Al Hammerit in order to get the effect.
Yeah. And that's only if you want to unlock whatever you've hit. And I he's all right. I got one from a booster pack, and I might throw it in a deck. I mean, I've got a Centripetus deck that runs a lot of Sphinxes as a creature type, but meh.
Yeah.
I've got better things I can do with people's hands with that deck.
Well, so you want to read the next card, Sean?
Yeah, it's Pia and Kieran Nalar. Legendary creature human artificer 2/2 for 2 and 2 red. When Pyrian, Kieran, and Nalar enter the battlefield, put 2/1/1 colors stopped artifact tokens on with flying onto the battlefield. And you can pay 2 in red, sacrifice an artifact. Pyrian, Kieran, and Nalar deal 2 damage to target creature or player. So they shock someone and kill one of your artifacts. This is an interesting card. In the artwork, they're not dead, so, you know, that's good for them.
They look happy.
It's Chandra's parents.
Yep.
For those that don't know.
For me, I mean, this card loses points almost immediately because of the Vorthos implications. In the story, you know, there's a disconnect between design and the creative team because they are clearly red and blue. And here, they're only red. And I'm sorry, this matters to me.
Hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter to me so much, but now you say it.
Nah.
I don't care so much, but it doesn't, like, I will quite happily run both Sadisis in play at the same time, or I was beating people up with both Artakas the other day.
No fair.
Which is good fun. The 2 Artakas wasn't fair, I'll agree with that.
No, that is not fair. That's awesome.
But, yeah, this, I mean, The Vorfoss thing, they're alive for a start, which is problematic, I guess, because they don't really tutor Chandra. Their deaths inspire her spark. So...
another meh card.
Meh.
The card itself is vaguely beautiful. If you can flicker the hell out of it, you can get an absolute ton of Thopters.
Well, there's yeah. better cards to flicker for that.
I was going to say, there's the
Thopter Assembly.
No, not Thopter Assembly, the Thopter Rogue that just came out.
Yep. There's a Whirler Rogue.
Yeah, that's it, the Whirler Rogue.
If you're running mono red and you want a commander and that's cheap and a 2-2 Felden.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, or Felden's better.
I'd even run Duretti before this one, but I'd put this in Duretti.
Yes. Yeah, that'd be good because you can sack the artifact and for various effects.
Yeah, I think we agree. Another meh card. What about Dwinen? Dwinen the Guiltleaf Dion. The Dwinen. Dwinen the Guiltleaf Princess Diana.
Oh, don't bring up the memory
for
of
two green green
Queen of Hearts.
A legendary creature, Elf Warrior, a 3/4.
It still hurts.
It's a 3/4 for 4 mana with reach. Other elf creatures you control get +1/+1.
I like that.
And whenever Diana attacks...
like a candle in the wind.
You gain one life for each attacking elf you control.
I That's lost okay. to this card at the pre-release.
Yeah, you did.
Were there other elves?
Yeah. Two of the Farhaven elves, draw a card elves, and one of the elves, the mana elves that's in Origins. I lost to this hard. It was horrendous.
So you think this card is good?
Yeah, I mean, this is, if not the commander of, is certainly in the 99 of any elf tribal deck. And elf tribal is a powerful thing when it gets going.
Yes, quite good.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, four mana for 3/4 reach is surprisingly good. Early game, yeah. It's just a shame she's green, really. I would have made her red. That's a joke.
And so, so Nate, do you have you share a similar opinion?
Yeah. I'd put it in any elf tribal deck.
Excellent. Yeah. So maybe we'll see more about elves in the next segment. Nate, why don't you start us off? Oh, look at this. It looks like you're completing a cycle here.
Mm-hmm. And actually, we are segueing to our second main topic, which is our top 5 picks.
All right, you're hanging a lampshade on it.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah,
and my number 5 pick is Kaltafed Soul Hoarder. 4 colorless and 2 black. Legendary creature demon, 6/6 flying. Whenever a permanent owned by another player is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you draw a card and you lose one life.
Uh-oh.
So this, it's tempting. It's so tempting, but it's probably going to kill me. So in that sense, it fits the flavor of the fictional character pretty well.
Yeah.
This is the definition of black color wheel. It's undercosted. 6 mana for a 6/6 flyer is undercosted. It's supremely powerful. Drawing cards is a very powerful thing. Black is secondary only to blue in drawing cards. But what a price!
Yeah, you're gonna want a reliquary tower and hopefully some kind of life gain. I don't know if you can manage it depending on your black strategy, but the more players there are and the more token decks you're facing, you're in trouble for playing this guy.
Yeah, you need to be careful when you play him. You need to sit there, assess what's coming out in the meta in front of you.
Yeah.
And say, am I going to lose when I play this?
Yeah, if your opponents are playing a sacrifice engine, it's bad news for you if you're running this guy.
And anyone can kill you with the board wipe at the right time, or Nev's Disc, or mass land destruction.
I think if they're doing a sacrifice engine, you need some you need some targeted removal that can kill a black creature. Just around to deal with it if you're about to die. Obviously, don't play this. I would say don't play this if you're 10 life or less. because normally if you're 10 life or less, it's later in the game and there's a load of stuff on the table.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is. Hey, listen to me and Nate. You know what he'd be great in, though? Aloro.
He would be good in Aloro deck.
Yep. Or at least he'd be mitigated in Aloro. Anything else about this guy? I mean, he does complete the cycle we were just talking about, so pretty good.
And he's my number 5 pick.
All right.
Yeah, good choice. He's a 6/6 flying demon, which is punchy as hell as well.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
So my number 5 pick is Orbs of Warding. For 5 mana, you get an artifact that says you have hexproof. If a creature would deal damage to you, prevent one of that damage. So it's like a, you know, it's taking the edge off. I've been running Caridor recently and playing a bunch of the You Get Hexproof cards, the Aegis of the Gods, Witchbane Orb, and I'm drawing a blank on it. So, but this card would fit in that deck, and essentially the hexproof is simply to protect my graveyard from people targeting it and removing it.
Hmm.
And so this is one more expensive than a Witchbane Orb, but and it doesn't get rid of any curses that are applied to me, but it does effectively give you one life every time a creature attacks you.
When's the last time you were cursed?
Didn't you do it to us the other day, Nate, with a bitter feud?
But that wasn't a curse.
Yeah, that's
it's not technically a curse but...
Yeah, right.
But this is better than Witchbane Orb.
I believe it is, yes.
Does it replace Witchbane Orb in your decks, or do you
No, you run both of them.
Okay.
Make room for it, if you can.
Do you know what I would do with this? I would put it in a mono-black deck, which is running a Cabal Coffers or like massive mana generation engine, stick out a Pestilence Demon, and blow everyone up.
Sean,
yes,
you're not allowed to play Magic anymore.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good.
Exactly what I would do with it. And I would run Urza's Armor is an older version of this, which also protects you from your own Pestilence rather than Pestilence Demon. Yeah, I'll just go, here, guys, take however many black I can put in my pool as damage. Bye.
We're going to burn this place down.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's your number 5, Sean?
My number 5 is a card I was very excited about reading this when it first came out, is the Archangel of Tithes. She is a 3/5 flying angel. She costs 1 and 3 white, which is the only bit about her I don't like. And she has, as long as Archangel of Tithes is untapped, creatures can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless their controller pays 1 for each of those creatures. So it's half of a ghostly prison / propaganda. And this bit is the bit I really love. As long as Archangel of Tithes is attacking, creatures can't block unless their controller pays 1 for each of those creatures. Mm-hmm. That is filthy.
Yeah, that is pretty filthy.
If you look at the vanilla test, a 3/5 flyer for 4 is all right, not bad at all.
That's great.
Yeah, in a control strategy, this is a fantastic card. It's going to help slow down the board. It's going to discourage people from attacking you. It's going to eventually, if your opponent's going to have to make a decision at points, whether they're going to play their spells or leave their mana up so they can block an attack from you. And that's the kind of decision I like to force on my opponent.
So if you still had a Grand Arbiter Augustine deck, you'd put it in there.
That's been dismantled for a minute. I think this will probably go into my Centriplets deck, and that because the Centriplets is mostly Azorius with a sort of splash black.
Right.
So I think this will go in there. And the Centriplets is already running Ghostly Prison, Propaganda. Norn's Annex, all that stuff. This is a great card. I think it's going to be relevant in Standard as stuff as well, though, so I expect it to be pricey for a while.
Yeah, you can definitely play this in a bunch of really good decks. A lot of anything that's pillow forwarding, to some extent, you could do that in the Derevi tap down decks. You can also put this in Hyksos if you're silly enough to run Hyksos as a general, as a commander rather. It's a good card. It's a really good card.
It's got beautiful artwork. I'm surprised you picked a white card. I told you, the last time we did a top list of anything, my number 1 card was a white card. We'll see if that's true today, shall we?
Yes, let's.
Hey, if Aurelia has this in her deck and it's 2 combat rounds, do they have to pay twice?
Yes, they do. Oh, no, they don't, actually. As long as creatures can't block. They might do because she's triggering it each time she attacks.
As long as Archangel of Tithes is attacking.
I think it is it a triggered ability when she attacks?
No. Yes, it's a triggered ability.
So it'll trigger twice because she'll be attacking twice?
I think it would be.
I mean, I might be wrong on that, but that's the my instinct from reading it is that...
Well, if we have any judges listening, please write in. Let us know.
All right.
All right. And so, Nate, back to you for your number four.
My number four pick is Priest of the Blood Rites. Three colorless and two black. It's a creature human cleric. 2/2. When Priest of the Blood Rite enters the battlefield, put a 5/5 black demon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. But at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life.
Oh my god, what a drawback that is.
Oh no. Mm-hmm. That's going to kill you in 20 turns.
Yep. assuming he's out.
If only there was a way in this color to get rid of my own creatures to my own benefit.
Yeah, but if you did that, you might not be able to bring them back. Mm. Oh, I see how this works now.
Right. And my Shadowborn Apostle deck uses Zombie Token Special Sauce with Rotlung Reanimator and Zathrid Necromancer. So this demon-flavored human cleric, it's a human cleric tribal deck, I guess. That fits right in.
It's a human cleric zombie tribal deck.
And yeah. Demons.
With demons.
Yeah. Yeah, his Shadowborn Apostles deck, I think you've played it, Sean. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I've played that one, and I've played his Relentless Rats deck. It was a pain in the backside. Didn't like Detention Sphere, though, did we?
So when you break Priest of the Blood Rite down, you're paying 3 and black for 7 power and toughness,
yep.
5 of which flies. And if you can figure out a way to recur him, Conjurer's Closet. Then
there, Mimic Vat.
Right, you get a 5/5 black demon creature every single turn.
Oh, I didn't even think about Mimic Vat with this on.
Yeah, and that's not even Magical Christmas Land. That's what we call
normal
synergy.
Yeah, a game. That's pretty spectacular.
That's a great card.
Yeah. I guess they did a lot of black cards because Sean, you and I share our next number 4.
We do. So our number 4, would you like to read it, Phil?
I would. It's so rare that I get to read a black card. Dark Petition, a sorcery for 3 and black, 5 converted mana cost. Again, kind of the sweet spot for EDH, isn't it? Unless you're playing Krenko. Search your library for a card and put that card into your hand. Then shuffle your library. But that's... Spell Mastery.
Hey.
Right, so 5 for a Demonic Tutor? A little overpriced. Spell Mastery, though, and this is still a little bit overpriced, but it's basically a Diabolic Tutor plus an old card. Spell Mastery says, if there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you get a benefit. In this particular case, add black to your mana pool. So it's a dark ritual stapled onto a Diabolic Tutor, which effectively makes it a Demonic Tutor.
Yeah, you get a refund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this card.
I think this card's great. You're going to need something to use that 3 black on, but that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, you've just tutored for something, haven't you?
Yep.
If only black ran Necropotent.
So, considering some people who are famous in this format's dislike for over-tutoring, they've printed a really cool tutor. Go get them all, kids, and put them in your decks.
Yeah, this but at least you're not getting your tucked commanders anymore, are you?
If any of you are running sort of a tutor suite and you have a Diabolic tutor in your deck, you should be taking Diabolic out and putting this in its place.
Absolutely, because it's like having 2 Demonic Tutors.
Yeah. Now, if you draw it earlier game, that kind of sucks, but cause there should be Demonic tutor in your deck anyway.
Right.
And so the picture is Liliana and her zombies facing Grizzlebrand there?
Grizzlebrand!
Is that Grizzlebrand?
Yeah, that's not Kotefesh, whatever it's called, Kotefesh.
Yeah, he's got the hooky hands.
Yeah, it is Grizzlebrand.
Wow, look at that.
She does go to Innistrad, doesn't she, in the story?
Yes, she does.
We should do a special podcast where we talk about the Vorfossi stories of these guys, and it'll just be like, I think she goes to... she casts some spells or something, I don't know.
The next card, we go back to Nate.
All right.
Yeah, Nate, you're number 4.
This next card has amazing Vorthosian implications.
Mm-hmm. Nissa's Revelation. It's 5 and 2 green. Sorcery. Scry 5.
What the what?
Then reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, You draw cards equal to its power, and you gain life equal to its toughness.
Oh, I like this.
Mm-hmm. So this is for decks that are creature-heavy with Calipigious creatures. So it's good in Tristani, Selesnya's Voice, also Duran the Siege Tower, Sapling of Kalfenor, or other Treefolk tribals. As implied by the card art, it works in Eldrazi tribal decks.
God, I only just realized that that is Emrakul.
Yeah, it is. It's Emrakul.
Yeah.
Just saying hi. Hey, what's up?
Hey, guys. I hope you haven't got 15 squirrels.
Can I play yet? Can you let me in to play?
Yeah. No, sorry, can't.
Sorry, the door to that dimension is not wide enough for you.
Yeah. Your friends Ulamog and Kozilek, though. Send them on over.
I just want to point out that Nate used Calipigious in a sentence, and it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nate, I actually had to look it up. I'm going to hug you.
All right. I'm educating.
Edumacate.
I think I went on holiday to the Calipigious Islands in Greece once.
They were special islands then.
There was a lovely kofta salad. I remember it was delish. So this card... This card, to me, feels like, and this is going to get a bit Vorthos-y in it now. Sort of color wheel techie in it. Feels to me like the green Disciple of Bolas. So it's more mana intensive than Disciple of Bolas, obviously. It's a lot more mana intensive.
You mean blue yellow, right?
Yeah, sorry. Outside the color square. So it needs a lot more mana than Disciple of Bolas, but it, from a blue-yellow perspective, it builds off of growth. So it looks for your creature from your deck. It scries, so it's looking into the future, what will come, and you gain the same bonus, which is drawing cards and life, done off the power and toughness of the creature. It's nice. It's a good card. It's a very good card.
Would Maelstrom Wanderer use it?
It's under the 8, so possibly it would only replace Shamanic Revelation, which Maelstrom Wanderer does use in the version I run.
But Shamanic Revelation is excellent. It's hard to lose that one.
I think I'm trying to look at the other card draw effects in there, and they tend to be, because there's blue in the Tima color spin, I'm not looking for it that much. I've got access to blue card draw, so, you know, I'm playing on easy mode, as you'd say, Nate.
Right. Yeah, and I think Shamanic Revelation offers more consistency, because you'll cast Shamanic Revelation when you have a bunch of creatures out, at least 5 or 6, right? And so you'll draw a card for each creature you control, plus you get life, whereas this one more or less relies on you having a Doran-style deck. Now, in Doran, this will be wonderful, because you do get you do want the big butt for the extra life, and you probably, unless you've got Magical Christmas Land going on, don't necessarily want to draw a whole bunch of cards. Unless, like Josh said in the last episode, you just don't care, and you're happy to discard a bunch of things. I don't know. This one's going to have to see some play.
You're not convinced?
I'm not convinced, although Vorthosian, you know, Vorthos-wise, it's fantastic. Because it sure looks like Nyssa is the one awakening the
Eldrazi. She's doing something silly, and Sorin's going to have to get in there and sort it out.
Yep.
Yeah, good old Sorin. Bless him.
But this is by no means a bad card.
No.
Not for our format, no.
I think if you were looking for a green card draw effect, this would be a good go-to option.
Yeah. A late-game card draw when your hand is depleted, especially in green, which doesn't have a lot of card draw. Really, and so late game, you just, you know, refill your hand. That's going to be good. In late game, you tend to need life as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Anything more about this?
I don't think I have anything to say.
Nope.
My number 3 is an atypical card for me. It's a blue card. Disciple of the Ring. 3 in blue. Again, there's that magical number. 5 converted mana cost. A creature, human, wizard for 3/4. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, wizards are usually really weak.
Yeah, that's Arcanus's sort of level of stats, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And maybe even easier to cast because not
no
so heavy on
no
the blue.
Triple blue, yeah.
And it has an activated ability, 1, and exile an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. But who plays those in blue? Choose 1. Counter target non-creature spell, unless its controller pays 2.
Doink.
Or... Or Disciple of the Ring gets +1/+1 until end of turn.
Meh.
Yeah. Or tap target creature.
Mmm.
Or untap target creature.
That's better.
That is much better. And you don't tap her to use her ability, and which means that you can reuse this if you've got a pile of instants and sorcery cards that you don't intend to flash back one way or another.
Yeah, so that counter target non-creature spell is actually, unless they pay two, is actually however many mana you've got and stuff in your graveyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's really good. The only thing that puts me off her slightly is the type of deck she has to go into. Isn't a deck I particularly enjoy playing with. So they're very spell-heavy, I'm guessing red-blue deck.
Right.
Although she'd go really good in a prowess deck, wouldn't she?
She would. Yeah, she effectively has prowess if you activate her ability for that one.
Yeah. Also, Disciple of the Ring was the name I used to have when I was a high school wrestler.
Oh, well, that's more than enough reason to play it. So it's the versatility of this card, or as Nate puts it, versatility. Her versatility really makes her a decent inclusion in a commander deck. Our next card is yours, Sean, and it's a giant of a card, isn't it?
It is a giant of a card. This card was, when this was spoiled relatively early on, I was very excited because I love this type of effect. This card is Day's Undoing. It's 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library, then draw 7 cards. If it's your turn, end the turn. And then it explains what ending the turn actually does in Magic. So this is almost a reprint of Time Twister. It's just got one little bit at the end where it ends your turn. So effects I run that are very similar, and I run them in several decks, are Time Spiral and Time Reversal, which are double the casting cost on one of them, and but then untap 6 lands, and is a remarkably powerful spell. And Time Reversal is just this spell without the end of turn bit. So it's drawing 7 cards, basically. If you hold this in your hand, and when your hand's getting low, you can dump in for 7 cards. If you need to recycle your deck back into your graveyard, if some evil git's playing a mill strategy on you.
Mm-hmm.
I love this effect. This will go into lots of Nekusar decks as a 3-mana finisher. I don't know what to say about it other than that, really. I love it.
Well, it's not that it's a finisher. It sets you up for the finish.
Well, with Nekusar, this 7 damage.
With Nekusar, yeah, it's 7 damage.
Yeah. The other thing you can do with it is, if you don't want to end the turn, I tend to, in blue, run both Vedalken Orrery and Leyline of Anticipation. So flashing this in at 3 mana at the end of someone's turn just before they pass it to you is very powerful. Very powerful effect. Is. And it doesn't exile itself, which a lot of these effects do. So which means you can start sort of...
No, it does. Only if you cast it on your turn. Exile all spells and abilities on the stack, including this card.
Oh, right, okay. So, yeah, try and get it out on your turn.
But if you can flash it out on your opponent's turn, then that actually doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. It's only if it's your turn that happens.
Oh, I wonder if Vedalken Orrery is going to see a spike.
Yeah, probably the Leyline might go as well. Vedalken Orrery was recently reprinted in Conspiracy, which brought its price down a chunk because it was getting up there, but then the reprint obviously pulled it down. The Leyline of Anticipation is still quite pricey, though.
Is it?
Yeah, relatively speaking.
Well, the Orrery is $2.
Yeah, and I think it was $5 or $6 not so long ago.
Yeah, not too long ago at all. And Leyline of Anticipation is... Oh, it's climbed. It has spiked.
I told you it was.
This year in February, it went up to, $5. Right now, it's sitting at about $6.
So I'm going to say that Vedalken Orrery is my pick of the week. Oh, no, it's not our podcast, is it?
Wow.
How's it?
How's it? Bing!
Yeah, so anyone else's opinion on what this actual card does rather than support cards for it?
It's fantastic.
It's Time Twister, for God's sake.
It could easily, now again, you know, it goes into the realm of support cards, but if you're going to play this card, it suddenly makes Quicken really useful.
Oh, Quicken's great.
Quicken is great, just in general. One blue for next sorcery you cast has Flash. And so I could totally see flashing this in for four mana. Like, would you pay four mana for this effect on your opponent's turn?
Yep, absolutely I would.
Four mana for an instant version of this is done.
I'd pay six mana for this.
And you regularly do, don't you?
I often do with a Time Spiral, yeah. Mm-hmm. Time Spiral's a great card, by the way, kids. Go check it out. Not the set, though. The set's good, but not. Yeah, it's not from that.
Time Spiral. You do exile it for six mana.
Yeah, it's six mana, but you untap six mana when you play it.
That's true, so you're ready to use it.
Yeah, but also if you've got land which taps for more than one.
I was just asking myself, why don't I have six of these? And it's because they're $15 a piece.
They dropped price back in the day because when Urza's Block was out, this is one of the cards that got restricted.
So, oh, sure.
Yeah, everyone sort of suddenly had a load that they weren't doing anything with. But that was before Commander and Type 2 and stuff was really a thing and all that stuff. Was it Type 2, Type 4? I forget the numbering. What turned into Legacy? So, Nate, what's your number two pick?
My number two pick is Chandra's Ignition. Three and two red. Sorcery. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent.
Womp womp.
So this is a one-sided board wipe and maybe a game winner. This yep. has a home in Ashling the Pilgrim. It could also help you flip your new Chandra Fire of Kaladesh.
Well, it's on a one-sided board wipe.
If you run decks in red that manage to make very large creatures, then it is.
As long as the creatures you create in red have greater toughness than their power, or have protection from red.
I think what he means is it's not... Yeah, Nate's saying it's going to be specifically built into a deck which has big-ass creatures in it.
Big-ass creatures.
This is a funny card with Malignus.
Calipigious creatures.
All right, so an alternative. Now, stay with me here. If you have creatures with power 8 or more, and you have the stomach to run Grafted Exoskeleton...
Nope.
I would, yes. I'm listening.
Chandra's Ignition, it makes the creature do the damage to every other player. And if that creature has Infect, well...
Oh, you're disgusting.
Yeah, that's in Lifelink and Death Touch and that thing you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah, Nate.
So I'm going to test this in my Marquesa Infect deck to see how well it works on, like, Phyrexian Juggernaut with Dictate of the Twin Gods out, you know?
Are you running in that deck Corrupted Conscious, Nate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's fun to Corrupted Conscious your own creature. Your opponent looks confused while you've controlled your own creature and given it Infect, and then you go, kaboom! And they go, oh, I see, I'm dead. Right.
Well, I don't need to do that to my own creature, because they already have Infect.
Ugh, God, I hate you. I hate you so much. Yeah, that is true.
So high five anyone? Anyone?
I will kamikaze against you. Neither of us will win, as Josh has said.
Yay, I win. Yay.
But Sean will win.
No, Pete will win.
Pete, I was just going to say Pete will win.
Yeah, you're not going to break rule one, which is kill Pete first.
No, we will. I will. If Nate runs this, totally. I'm just going to kamikaze against
so
Nate.
Less disgusting combos with this. Stuffy Doll is a good one. The arc? What's it called?
Arc Bond.
Arc Bond with this is hilarious.
You know what's really funny? Is Baleful Strix.
Death Touch.
Plink! Oh, too bad.
Oh, never mind.
Or Typhoid Rats.
Or Ichor Rats.
Anything with Death Touch.
Yeah.
That's Ichor Rats for people that know how to speak properly.
Not me.
And so that's a pretty good card.
Yeah.
I think it's better than Chandra, frankly.
Yes, I think it's better. Her Ignition is better than herself.
Yes. Yep. My number two is a card I think you pulled last night / this morning.
I did get this. It was great.
Yeah. Sword of the Animist.
Mmm.
Two manas for a legendary artifact equipment. What? Equipment? Equipped creature gets +1/+1. Okay, this is nothing. Oh, wait. Whenever equipped creature attacks, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tap, then shuffle your library.
So good.
Yeah, equipped too, and this goes into all of those white and red and black decks that don't have any kind of land searching. or, you know, significant card draw without a disadvantage, you just strap this onto something and you attack with it. It's going to be wonderful. Put it on a token, laughs, hilarity ensues.
This is going to be, I predict, an EDH staple for years to come.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The equip cost is a little bit steep, so you're basically saying for 4 monas, you're getting a basic land. And we don't run a lot of basic lands, but we run enough.
It's repeatable. So repeatable.
Yeah, I know. It stays out, and for 2 mana, then the next time. So for 6 mana, then you've pulled 2 basic lands. For 8 mana, you've pulled 3. And it just gets better from there. And yeah, you put this in something like Nahiri, and hijinks ensue.
Yeah, this is going to go into a multitude of decks I have. Just so many. I need to buy them before they inevitably shoot up in price.
Well, it's already... Well, we were talking about this before. It's already somewhat pricey, isn't it?
$2, was it?
As of recording, which is July 10th. Nope, $4.50 for...
Ugh.
Yeah, it's...
For a rare as well. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, but this will never hit bulk rare status, I think.
No, it will be bought up by all us people.
Commander players are going to pick it up. And let's just hope there's a whole lot of Origins opened up in drafts this summer.
Yeah, core sets are a bit weird with drafts, aren't they? Because Battle for Zendikar roll out and it kind of gets forgotten. M15 and M14 both got forgotten as soon as Tarkir / Theros got rolled out.
So, good card. Nate, you going to use this card?
Yeah, I might use this card.
Very good. Sean, what's your number 2?
This card is objectively not the most powerful, but it made me smile, and it's the sort of stupid rattlesnake type effect that I really like, and it is Tainted Remedy. It is 2 and a black for an enchantment. Very simple. If an opponent would gain life, that player loses that much life instead.
Sucker!
Screw you, hippies!
If only it had flash, though, that would be great.
That would be funny. But anyone that's playing, I don't know, a Loro, where they have to gain life every turn.
Yep.
It's really mean. It's just mean.
Yeah, it shuts down Sanguine Bond, and it makes Exquisite Blood actually hazardous, very hazardous to whoever has it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It's cheap. Is it worth, though, right? So if you're playing a deck that has maybe a few little bits and bobs of life gain in it, maybe you're running some lifelink creatures here and there. You know, the Wormcoil Engine is the obvious candidate that's in a lot of EDH decks. Is it worth wasting a precious disenchant on a Tainted Remedy? Or are you just really careful with what you attack with?
It really depends on the deck, doesn't it? If you're running a Trastani deck...
but if you're just running a deck which has got a few lifelinky bits in it, so maybe you're running... And Vampire Nighthawk and...
Shamanic Revelation.
Shamanic Revelation is a good one. A Wormcoil Engine, because that's in most decks. Are you going to waste a disenchant on this? Especially in EDH, where big, powerful enchantments tend to sit around. I think it's going to sit out there like an annoying little thing. And people are just going to be like, well, it's not really worth attacking into that person. It's not like if you play an Exquisite Blood and nothing else on the board to help you, where people go, well, I have to kill him, don't I? It doesn't really help me, but it does help me in that it stops my opponent gaining ground.
Yeah, it's a significant nuisance card and a decoy card, right? I think it has a very powerful effect. If you don't disenchant it, you're going to be end up suffering for it sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do disenchant it, then that's when you play. You know, that's when your opponent plays Necropotence and the game's over.
Necropotence, wonderful times. Why haven't they reprinted that?
I don't know. Because they hate good things.
Yeah, they do. Why can't we have nice things? Nate, what's your opinion on Tainted Remedy?
I'm going to be adding it to Marieki Rebarrett, and since that is almost certainly not the correct pronunciation of her name, in the future I will simply refer to her as Mare Bear. And it rhymes with Care Bear, because people should be nicer to her.
No. She's a very bad, bad person.
She's a problem solver.
Mm-mm.
She solves a lot of problems. And this card solves the life gain problem. So, yeah.
It does. You want to be careful not to run it in the same deck as Erebos, so they cancel each other out, though. You've got redundancy in your hand if you've got Erebos out, and then you're like, you draw that, and you're like, oh, that does literally nothing. My opponents can't gain life. If Mare Bear rhymes with Care Bear, If it was Merber, would it be a bear that lives underwater?
Sure, why not?
Merber.
The burr of the sea.
The burr is in my mer.
Oh, we are so close. We're punchy. And I hear Blake, who is a favorite among our listeners.
Hey, he's in the other room getting his bottom changed.
Yay.
Yay. So, Nate, what's your number one pick?
Number one, best card in the set for Nate.
My number one, Flame Shadow Conjuring. Three in a red.
Boy.
Enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay red. If you do, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. That token gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step.
Aww.
So, what's better than Purphoros putting a mere battle sphere on the table? Purphoros putting two mere battle spheres on the table.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, if you wish to send hate mail, that's at Mr. Plorg.
Or what about Riku of Three Reflections?
Oh, God's sake. So this is Riku could technically get four out of it because you could copy the copy. So if you had two spare red plus your initial blue and a green, you're rocking out there. Yeah.
How about a Kiki Threeky?
That's weird because that also used to be my wrestling name at school.
Could Kiki Jiki make combos that are twice as infinite?
This is a great card. This is not exactly, but about as close as you're going to get without Wizards having a major rethink of their printing policy. A reprint of Sneak Attack, which used to let you, for one red, chuck a card out of your creature card out of your hand and attack, and then it gets destroyed. I'm not saying exactly the same. It's about as close as you are going to get without investing $40 or whatever Sneak Attack is now.
Sneak Attack's higher than
probably
that.
Probably more than that.
I just bought a Chinese one for $40. Splinter Twin for 2 and 2 red, right? Enchanted creature has tapped, put a token that's a copy of this creature onto the battlefield. That token has haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. That's a pretty good card.
Yep, and it is.
And I think this is very, very similar to Splinter Twin. Which, by the way, has cratered because of its reprint in Modern Masters 2015.
Yeah, it died. It's also one of the most popular modern decks, is the twin deck, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, its high median price was $28 or so, and now it's down to $14. So time to pick up your Splinter Twins, by the way.
Yes, that would be excellent. Oh, Purphoros and Impact Tremors. Nate, you're a horrible man. Sorry, I'm reading Nate's ideas that are written down.
If you have a red deck of the Purphoros Impact Tremors flavor, or if you play Mana Echoes, then take a look at Flame Shadow Conjuring.
What's clear is, at the end of this episode, I'll be the only one allowed to play Magic anymore. I mean, Nate, this is terrible. You should never play this card.
Scary. Really scary.
You know he's going to, too, and it's going to hurt us.
Mm-hmm. The problem with these red cards, it's Nate that brings them up, is they're so, like, slap you in the face brutal. There's not really that much to say about them, isn't there? They're just like, oh, my face. Why the face all the time? Let's move along.
It'd be fun to, this was something we were doing about a year ago. One of the members of my meta at the time was playing a Purphoros deck, and we were effectively trying to figure out how many turns that player could get in order to take on an entire table full of people, right? And I would love to start, you know, running Purphoros trials again.
I'd like to put Purphoros on trial.
The Purphoros trials. Is that a watch list?
Perfro should be on the watch list, yeah.
All right.
Phil, what's your number one?
My number one is Elemental Bond. I know it will be controversial. 2 and a green for an enchantment. It's an uncommon enchantment, but I think that this is probably the card that I will use in every single deck I run, because I only run green decks in. Whenever a creature with power 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. Now, why would I use this in Marith, you ask? Well, because of Magical Christmas Land, where if I eventually do get a Murugandha Petroglyphs, all of my 1-1 elementals will come in as 3-3s. All with Sigil Captain out, all of my 1-1 elementals come in as 3-3s. And so pretty much in any deck that's running green or any commander deck splashing green, you're going to be generating an awful lot of creatures with power 3 or greater. And if you are, every one of them comes in with a card. So this is a spectacular card. That it's uncommon is really strange, because I think it warps the environment. I think what's working, it warps the limited and the standard environment, I believe. The only things working against it are things like Collected Company. And there's even one from this set that rewards, it basically looks for creatures that are converted mana cost 3 or less. Which generally means weaker creatures, which generally means power 3 or less. So this kind of works counter to that. But again, if you're playing an Eldrazi deck.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
This goes in Animar.
Absolutely. Like, this totally goes in Animar because he's casting all of these expensive creatures for almost nothing. And so you're getting a creature for like one colored mana, maybe two, plus a card. All right. I'll cast a Terastodon for two green and draw a card off it.
Mm-hmm. And your Flame Shadow Conjuring can make two Terastodons.
Yes, it can. Right. And believe me, so far both of the number ones we've discussed will go into Marath.
I think this next card might go into Marath as well. Nah, it's not. This card's all about the blue.
Yeah, this card's blue and white.
And black.
And Oloro.
Yeah, see, Esper. This card's Esper all over. So my number one pick, and this was a card that when I read it, I was like, yeah, I probably want one of them, is MC Alhamarit's Archive. It's 5 mana for a legendary artifact. If you would gain life, gain twice that much life instead. That's all right, I hear, but that's not why I'm interested. The next bit's better. If you would draw a card, except for the first one you would draw in each of your draw steps, draw 2 cards instead. This is double card draw, double life gain. That is, I mean, do I have to explain why that's good? It's, you could criticize it for being win more, but I think at that point, if it's in the right sort of card draw engine deck, it's not just win more, it's win the game. I'm going to draw up to what I need, I'm going to play out and win. Opinions, fellas?
At least we have Tainted Remedy now to fight this nonsense.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. And it must be stopped.
And Notion Thief is going to help with the cards, but then Sean's Consecrated Sphinx is going to make you mill yourself out.
Yeah, if you play Notion Thief against me, I will try and murder you with a Con Sphinx.
Alhamarit's Archive is excellent. It's a Sphinx's Revelation, basically.
Well, couldn't you imagine casting a Sphinx's Revelation whilst you have this in play?
Yes, I can imagine that, Sean.
Wouldn't it just be glorious? Wouldn't you have a smile on your face for the rest of the week after doing that? Look at that. I've cast the Sphinx's Revelation for, I don't know, let's pick an arbitrary number that you'll normally cast that for. 5, say.
Yeah, 5. Maybe turn after this at 6.
Yeah, that's 10 or 12 cards plus 10 or 12 life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, it's brilliant. So this is part of a cycle of 5 to cast legendary artifacts, including the Pyromancer's Goggles, and I can't remember the names of the other ones. We discussed one earlier, actually.
The Sword of the Animist. Each of them relates to one of the Planeswalkers. Here's something that's really interesting. And this card, this other card, sees a lot of play in EDH. Sylvan Library.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, this says you're drawing 5 cards and you're putting 2 of them back. Oh, yeah. Turn.
It's just so good. You could criticize it and say, if you don't have card draw effect already going, or a life gain effect already going, it literally does nothing. Well, actually, no.
If you're not playing EDH properly,
you got to make it work for you.
But when you put if you just put a little bit of care into it, it rewards you so highly back.
Yeah, it does.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I can't wait to get hold of a couple of them.
Hold on. I'm weeping. It's beautiful. It really
so
is.
Beautiful, man.
This is a fantastic card. When they spoiled this 2 weeks ago, right, I think they did it in their first week, I was like, what are they doing?
this was when I saw this, I thought this is going to be a good set for Commander. The second I saw that.
You know, it gives Howling Mine a real advantage to the caster all of a sudden.
Oh,
too.
My God, yes. You're getting a load. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Imagine, what's the Well of Ideas, which is the one that already gives you two cards? So the Howling Wine in blue. It says you draw two in additional cards and your opponents draw one additional card. But that's, you draw four additional cards to your opponent's one.
Yeah, there's got to be something we can do with this. What do you think? Sorry, couldn't hold it.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, all three of these cards, all three of these number one cards are just fantastic. Well, I can't wait to see them. And so I guess we'll see these brewing pretty quickly, won't we? Especially now that you own them and I'm going to do some pre-releases this weekend.
Yeah, I'm intending to get my hands on some boxes of Origins and open them up. I actually think this is... Okay, so now we've come to the end of our favourites. Here's a question. So any listeners out there wondering, would you guys... Are you intending to buy any boxes or a box of Origins boosters?
You're asking the two of us?
Yeah, I am. Because I am. I'm intending to get at least one, probably two.
I've already got one pre-ordered, and like I was joking about last episode, I fully expect to maybe even just rip this box, but I'll probably get a couple of friends together to draft it. Then I might get another box, right? I think this is going to be an awesome draft experience, and I can't wait to do that a lot.
I enjoyed doing sealed with it. It felt nice.
Yeah, six packs. I'm super looking forward to that tomorrow. I just have been so busy at work, I haven't been able to go down and pre-register, so I think my favorite local game store, Emerald Knights, is going to be sold out, and I might have to go to Legacy, which isn't bad, it's just a little younger than I like.
What about you, Nate? Are you going to be buying any Origins?
Maybe.
Committed as always, Nate.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, listeners, let us know if you're going to be purchasing and in what quantity, mostly so that we can live vicariously through your choices. Why don't we get to our listener picks now? Because we asked our listeners on Twitter and Facebook to tell us their top two cards each and in what decks they would use them. I'll start this off. So, listener Matt Book, at Matt Book on Twitter, says, I'm going to try out Pyromancer's Goggles in my Shuyun deck and Orbs of Warding in Shuyun and a couple of others.
Alexander Newman, at Alexander Noom, I got two more legends, one a planeswalker for my mono white legend tribal, and a lot of toys to try in Titania.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so we've got Alex, I'm going to apologize for the mispronunciation of your name, Alex Setso, who is at Alex CK Setso. He says, too many to post, but Flame Shadow Conjuring in Zero Learn of the Claw, double up on some Dragon Beats. That'll work. He also says, Shadows of Past in Geesa, I presume that's Geesa the Geesa the Ghoul Caller, sorry. Creatures die all the time. Why not get an effect out of it? I don't know Shadows of the Past. What does Shadows of the Past do?
Let's look it up.
Looking up shadows of the past.
Looking into the shadows.
One black in an enchantment. Whenever a creature dies, scry one. Or pay four and a black. Each opponent loses two life and you gain two life. Activate this ability only if there are four or more creature cards in your graveyard.
Not that I would condone that kind of stuff, but if you create infinite mana, that's everyone's dead. But yeah, lovely. Lovely.
I think that might be worth being in the 99.
Yeah, that actually got brought up against me and a guy using a Golgari colored deck a few hours ago. And yeah. I had to go out of my way to take it out because it was going to kill me. Luckily, I was in Orzhov colors and I had a little 1/1 that kills an enchantment. But yeah, I had to deal with it. I had no choice.
Yeah, nice, Alex. Hopefully, we'll get you to playtest this against us. Judd, who is at GU Doug, he writes, the new Indric Stomp Howler. That's the elf. I can't remember its name. The new Indric Stomp Howler in two decks, maybe a card or two elsewhere. So yeah, so basically the Indric Stomp Howler stood out. I like that card too. That was a great card. It adds redundancy to their Reclamation Sage and the Indric Stomp Howler. So a good way to get rid of enchantments and or artifacts with creatures only.
Richie Tiongson at Warlan. Woodland Bellower in Maelstrom Wanderer.
Oh.
Pia and Kieran in Purphoros. Dark Petition in Sidisi. Chandra's Ignition in Bryon.
Oh. Oh, interesting.
The strong arm.
Yeah, I wonder if Chandra's ignition, though, because Brian will do the damage equal to the target to the creature he's flinging. It will do damage equal to its toughness, but then how is Chandra's ignition playing into that?
No, it's sacrificing a creature other than Brian's stout arm.
All right.
Deals damage equal to the sacrificed creature's power to target player. He has lifelink, so that's the lifelink on Chandra's ignition will be a nice, massive boost.
It's not related to the creature that Brian is flinging, but it's more related to Brian himself.
Sure.
Just for all the listeners at home, they are talking about the card Brion Stout Arm, but they're pronouncing it wrong. Sorry. Carry on.
Whatever. Brian Stout Arm.
Brian is made out of aluminum, isn't he?
Yeah. Let's see. We also got Mizium Meddler in each blue deck, Evolutionary Leap in each green, and Sword of the Animist in every non-green deck.
So Evolutionary Leap, currently $5.55. It's sort of like a natural selection or a...
Survival of the Fittest?
Survival of the Fittest, right?
Oh, yeah.
Except it puts the card into your hand. I mean, it's not too bad in a token deck.
Survival of the Fittest puts a card into your hand as well, doesn't it?
Does it? No.
So you discard a card and tutor a card into your hand.
Trust me.
Yeah, it goes in your hand.
I am a survivor, baby, and I'm well fit. Sorry.
all of what I just said will be edited completely. So Evolutionary Leap is a great card.
Yep.
Yeah, so those are good cards. And Sword of the Animus, of course, we agree about.
So Robin Larson, who is at Purgatog.
Hey, Robin.
We've spoken before.
We still haven't played with him. We've known him for a while, but we still haven't played with him.
Yeah, Robin, what's with that? Come on. I'm joking. Displacement Wave is going straight into Thassa Sea Monsters and Dock Petition into all black decks forever and Geesa. So Displacement Wave is the X mass bounce, so two blue and X, return all non-land permanents with casting cost X or less to their owner's hands. I'm going to guess that's going to go in with Whelming Wave into Thassa Sea Monsters.
This is an extra. This is a potentially less expensive Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, it's also very targeted. So if you're playing with, say, Sea Monsters, which Robin is here, you've got quite a high average CMC on all your creatures. So they're all between... I think they average out about 6. Some of them go all the way up to 9, though. So, you're dropping one of these for 5, you're going to bounce a lot of stuff whilst leaving yourself a fairly safe board presence.
Yeah, it actually plays a lot very similarly to Ugin.
Well, sort of, yeah. Ugin makes me want to punch things.
It's a high-pass filter.
Yes, it's basically another finisher, like Cyclonic Rift, Displacement Wave, Ugin's exile ability.
And Dark Petition, all black decks forever? Well,
absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Budget Demonic Tutor. Yeah.
So Joel Martin at Normality writes, Day's Undoing in Nekusar. Oh, yes. And the Great Aurora in any commander with green. Lol. Great Aurora is a scary card because it's so unpredictable. But I can see its appeal, and definitely, for that effect and that chaotic effect in green, I'm certainly going to try it out in a couple of decks.
Do you play Wave of Vitriol?
I have tried it. I have to wean myself off of non-basic lands for Wave to really be palatable.
I've been running Wave of Vitriol in my Jared Golgari Lichlord deck, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I can see why.
So, friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski. Next. And by friend of the show, I mean former friend of the show after making this suggestion. Tragic Arrogance into his Zergo Helm Smasher deck. Flame Shadow Conjuring into Riku deck. So we've discussed the Flame Shadow Conjuring and Riku. So Tragic Arrogance is sort of card I despise and is actually banned because of its mass land destruction in my meta. But I can see why people would like it. I just... Someone read it.
Wait, it's not mass land destruction.
Yeah, it's not touching lands. For each player, it's a sorcery. 3 and 2 white, again, that magical 5 converted mana cost. For each player, you choose from among the permanents that player controls an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker. Then each player sacrifices all other non-land permanents he or she controls.
Okay. I mean, it's so one-sided in that the caster gets to choose all the opponent stuff as well.
Well, you'll get to keep your Sacro Tribe Elder.
Yeah. It's horrific.
See, what he's doing as well, he's the one who I first saw the Assault Suit Zergo on.
Mm.
Or Assault Suit Zergo deck. And so, you know, he basically doesn't pick Zergo with the Assault Suit on, and he doesn't have to sacrifice it.
The best Assault Suit combo I saw was Assault Suit onto Rakdos, the Defiler. Sending him off. Everyone destroy all their stuff.
No, it's terrible.
And you put a cheap red enchantment that makes him attack every turn.
Yeah, and there's several of those. Funny. Funny because it's true. Thanks, Nick, for that.
Yeah, really. Thanks, Nick. Thanks.
Russ at Adopt MTG Tokens says Displacement Wave and Day's Undoing, both in Derevi EDH.
Ooh.
And Day's Undoing in Modern Affinity.
Wow.
I'll pretend I understand what the words Modern and Affinity mean. Is this...
Well, you know what Affinity is.
A hand in poker or something?
It's an ability word. Modern, yeah, what does modern mean?
Modern.
So Magical Hacker at Darkpaw H says Mage Ring Network in Hana and Duretti and Hangerback Walker in Duretti. Actually, Hangerback Walker was if we were doing honorable mentions, that was certainly in that honorable mention for the same reason as you're putting it. But Mage Ring Network I would advise against because it's a storage land and most people don't run storage lands. They're just not fast enough. I mean, I could see a storage land in something like a Krufix or an Omnath, but everybody else, it's tough. And this one isn't adding colorless. So, I don't know, maybe you have a deck that really works with that Magical Hacker. So, let us know.
Could you untap it and re-tap it with a ton of... It would be a lot of work for, I don't know, what the payoff would be. Educate us.
Well, you put a profit in. You put a profit of Krufix in, and you're going to get one per opponent's turn?
He's playing artifact decks. So he doesn't care that the mana is colorless.
Right. So is he? So, but he's running Duretti, so is he playing the red storage land?
The red storage land, it's a red and black one, is anyone I can think of, is Molten Slag Heap.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I guess the question is, are people running the storage lands? I would advise against it, but maybe it'll work. So let us see a deckless Magical Hacker.
EDH Ghost, who is at EDH Ghost, says Nyssa and the Sword of the... He's written Amorist, which sounds like a French person being in love, or someone who really likes Americans. Sort of the Animist, for all the ramp. Yeah, everyone loves ramp. These are great things. The Sword in particular, as we've already said, for ramp outside of the color wheel. Brilliant.
Sean J. Marvin, at Mr. E. Meat 4000.
Hey, Sean.
Magmatic Insight in any red deck. Nothing beats fixing those late game land draws. Mizium Meddler in my Nin the Pain Artist deck.
I've never seen a Nin build. I'd love to see a deck list for that.
A.E. Marling is, he's got a fantastic Nin the Pain Artist deck. And I say fantastic because it's not absolutely brutal, but it is a lot of fun. We met him at the Gathering in Vegas that the Command Zone put on.
Oh, cool. Do we think Nin the Pain Artist is named by a designer who's a big fan of the popular band Nine Inch Nails?
Has to be.
Go. Yeah.
Cody Stevens. Oh, great. Which is at, he or she is at code_E_. And Cody says, Archangel of Tithes in Gaddock Teague.
Phil just did something that you have to be over 18 to hear, I think.
And Disciple of the Ring in any of my blue decks. Yes, I agree with the latter, but I think Archangel of Tithes, in Gaddock Teague is too mean. You're not allowed to do that. That's a corollary with the new Mulligan rule.
Yeah.
What?
So, Anders Skoglund, who is at Skoogiz, says... Gabe/Garve has his eyes on the Mana Gorger Hydra, which is a card we've not discussed yet, and he'll try out the Animist Sword in some of his green decks. Well, I would say the Animist Sword in any deck. What does a Mana Gorger Hydra do?
It's a 1/1 Hydra that gains a +1/+1 counter every time a player casts a spell.
Well, that's good. That's really good. There used to be a big fat version of that. Forgotten Ancient, was it?
I think so.
Yeah, he was a lot more expensive. So getting him out early doors is actually going to be a really powerful play.
Yeah, whenever a player casts a spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Mana Gorger Hydra.
Yeah, and in Gabe as well, so you can distribute those token, those +1/+1 counters around and do things with them.
Yep.
I have a Gabe deck. That's a brilliant idea. I'm stealing that idea. Thank you very much.
2 and a green for a Hydra with trample, yeah. So it's pretty good.
David Greet at Specky Geek. Shaman of the Pack in Rhys Exiled, and Woodland Bellower in Fraelis.
I have never seen a Rhys Exiled deck. I wonder if it's time to look those up.
I've not either. As soon as you hear Rhys, you presume he's going to be redeemed.
Yeah. And Woodland Bellower, that's a great little card. I say little, but it's a big card. Woodland Bellower for 4 and 2 green. When Woodland Bellower enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a non-legendary green creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less. There you go. This is the other one that looks for small creatures. And put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So it's like you're fishing out a Reclamation Sage. Not too bad. Specky Geek David, tell us why Fraelis in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. You tell us.
here's probably a new future friend of the show, if you want to think of Nick as a friend of the show, Adam Rogozinski. Can't wait to actually playtest with you. I'm sorry it didn't work out that time. And he says, I love that blue sorcery that allows you to play a spell or two from the top of target opponent's library. Both my Silumgar and Lazav are itching to cast it. Smile emoticon. He typed that out, yeah. So what is that blue sorcery that does that?
I am looking that up as we speak. 1 second. Yeah. Blue sorcery. This is very exciting for people at home.
It's probably got the word telepath in it.
Oh, the telepath.
Talent of the telepath.
Well, look at
2 and 2 blue sorcery. Target opponent reveals the top 7 cards of his or her library. You may cast an instant or sorcery card from among them without paying its mana cost. Then that player puts the rest into the graveyard. Spell mastery. If there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you may cast up to 2 revealed instant and or sorcery cards instead of 1.
I think, Adam, that you're relying on Magical Christmas Land to actually put decent sorceries on top of your opponent's library.
What? How do you do that?
I think what he's doing is looking at the best case.
Right. This is going to whiff a lot.
That's exactly it. This is going to whiff a lot.
Yeah, but it's only 4 mana. It's worth a roll of the dice.
Yeah,
I guarantee there will be a time right where Adam is playing a game and he's utterly screwed back against the wall and he draws this card, top decks it, and crunks into it and just goes, hey, look at that. Finds an answer, a board wipe or Rise of the Dark Realms or some hilarious spell and goes, hey, I win. And that'll make him smile forever. And this is going to be a bulk rare, this one. Yeah, I confidently predict.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Go for it. I say do it. And I want to hear the story of when you beat face with it.
Why, yes, I will wipe the board and take 2 extra turns. I mean, it could happen. It could be pretty interesting. And in something like Narset or Jaleva or... any of the
Grand,
big mods.
Grand Arbiter will do that quite happily. If you weren't looking for a wipe the board, then take extra turns. My Grand Arbiter deck would be prime candidate. If your opponent's playing with Melek, you can see what you're about to cast off them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cruel. That's just another egg in Melek's face.
Yeah, I can't stand that, Commander. Sorry, Melek fans. I was looking at the EDH Rec website recently, which was discussed on the Command Zone podcast, which looks at different popular commanders. I was just disappointed Melek is so popular. It's not good. If you're playing If you're playing Izzet Colors and you're choosing Melek over Niv-Mizzet or Joyer of the Gitu or even Nin, what are you doing?
Something has gone terribly wrong.
Keranos is better than him. And Keranos is just a stack of spells and your god. Remember, everyone, my opinions are just opinions. I reserve the right to change them, and just because I tell you something doesn't mean it's true. So don't get upset. It's just what I think, and it doesn't matter.
No, but in this case, your opinion is correct.
Yes.
Tibor and Lumia is a better card than Melek.
Oh, that, you're pushing that a little.
I know, that's gotten low. That's gotten low.
No below the belts, please, Phil. All come right. on.
Sorry. Just, you know, whenever you play a blue spell, target creature gains flying until end of turn. And whenever you play a red spell, Tibor and Lumia deals one damage to each creature without flying. I don't know. Maybe better than Melek. Not
it's
really.
Not, it's not six mana, is it?
No, it's not six mana. That's the only trade-off. And that's maybe the only thing that stack ranks it higher than Melek. But Melek, oh god, I just don't have a good anything about Melek. So, I don't know where we left off there. I'm not sure, because for any of our listeners hearing this particular passage, Nate, I'm going to blame Nate, but Nate, Sean, and I just sort of went off on a jag because none of us like Melek. Mm. And we may have said some naughty words, one or two.
Words like... No, I'm not going to say.
But, you know, what I want to say really is thanks for downloading and listening to the episode. We love to hear from you folks, and we really need the feedback from you. In particular, like Josh said last week, you know, if you can go up to iTunes and give us ratings, we percolate to the top of the commander-oriented list, not absolutely the top, but near the top. We get a lot more exposure that way, and Wizards of the Coast will help us in terms of prize support, which... After this episode, after we stop recording, I'm going to actually talk to the other commander and hosts about something, an idea I've been brewing. So maybe you'll hear about something special in the next couple of weeks. You can reach us by going to our website at commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. On Facebook, we are Commander and MTG. And on Twitter, we are @CommanderandMTG. It's almost like there's a pattern there, guys. So individually on Twitter, I'm @KetJack.
I am @Copain26.
I'm @MrPlorg.
Our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Plorg.
Mm-hmm.
Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Huh?
All hail nepotism.
All hail nepotism.
Yay.
You can find more art from Mr. Picto by going to, of all places, mrpicto.co.uk. And special thanks to all of our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course to Justin for his server space. So thank you everybody for listening. We hope you had a good time. Anything you guys want to say?
No.
Nope.
All right.
I want to say a little message to my special lady out there, Liliana Vess. Mm. Nate, play the sexy music. Hey, baby. Mmm. I like the way you're heretical. Come over here. Make me discard my hand, baby. And my wife walked in. Hi, darling.
Some packs got four demons on her back. Gothofed made her skin glow. After that, he's first to go. Gristlebrand and Avacyn, Hell Vault locks them in. Lily blew it all away, but she's still got hell to pay.